So far, so good, Job called over the back of the seat to where Sean was hiding. What's the time? 7 minutes past 8. Perfect. We'll hit the border post just after 10, when the guards are thinking of going off duty. The 100 kilometres to the border seemed much further. The metal floorboards of the cab were corrugated and cut into Sean's buttocks, transferring the impact of every pothole in the neglected highway up his spine and into his skull. Go under the top, border post ahead, Job called at last. Not too bloody soon, Sean assured him as the truck slowed and the overhead floodlights flooded the cab. Sean pulled the tarpaulin over his head and sank down as low as he could below the seat back. He felt the truck brake and trundle to a halt. Job switched off the engine and opened the door of the cab. Wish me luck, he muttered, as he stepped down from the cab. Neither of them knew what to expect. The border formalities must surely be relaxed to accommodate the interchange of troops guarding the railway line. Job was dressed for the part and in possession of a genuine army paybook and ID. The truck's registration papers were likewise genuine, and yet they could be compromised by some small, unforeseen detail, or by an alert border guard. If anything went wrong, Job would give a single long blast on his whistle, and they would shoot their way out. All the rifles and rocket launchers were loaded, and the RPD machine guns on the cabs were manned. As the minutes drew out, so Sean's nerves stretched tighter. He expected at any moment the shrilling of Job's whistle and the shouting and the gunfire. Then at last there was the crunch of footsteps in gravel and the voices of Job and a stranger approaching the truck. Both doors of the cab opened and Sean tried to shrink himself as the truck tripped slightly under the weight of more than one man climbing aboard. "Where do you want me to drop you off?" Job asked casually in Shona, and a voice Sean had never heard before replied, "At the edge of the town. I'll tell you where." Sean turned his head a stealthy inch and through the gap between the seats saw the blue serge cloth of a customs inspector's uniform. With horror he realised that Job was giving an off-duty inspector a lift into Umtali. The truck pulled forward, and the inspector lowered the side window and shouted to the guards on the barrier, "It's all right, open!" And as they accelerated ahead, Sean had a glimpse of the raised barrier through the window. He had to cover his mouth to prevent himself laughing aloud with relief and triumph. On the back of the Unimog, the troopers seemed infected by the same reckless spirit of abandon. They were singing as the column wound down the hill to the town of Umtali. Job was casually discussing with the customs inspector the merits of the Stardust nightclub and the price of a short time with one of the bar girls. "Tell Bodo the barman at the Stardust that you're a friend of mine," the inspector advised Job when they dropped him off on the outskirts of the town. "He'll get a special price for you and tell you which of the girls have the clap and which ones are clean." As they pulled away, Sean could at last crawl out from behind the seat and slump gratefully into the passenger seat. "What the hell kind of a trick was that?" he complained. "You damn nearly gave me a hernia." "What better way to get VIP treatment," Job chuckled, "than to have the head of the customs service as a pal? You should have seen the guards at the border saluting us." "Where is this nightclub?" "Not far. We'll be there before 11." They drove in silence for a few minutes, while Sean rehearsed the next order he had to give. He waited until Job turned the truck into a dimly lit side street and switched off the engine. In the side mirror, Sean watched the other two Unimogs pull in behind him, cut their engines, and switch off their headlights. "Back home again," Job chuckled. "Nothing to it." "Back home," Sean agreed. "And back home is where you are going to stay." There was a long silence, and then Job turned his head and looked at Sean thoughtfully. "What do you mean by that?" "This is the end of the road for us, Job. You aren't coming to Grand Reef. You aren't hijacking any stingers, and you sure as hell aren't coming back to Mozambique with me." "You're firing me?" Job asked. "That's it, pal. Got no more use for you." Sean took a small wad of Zimbabwe dollars, part of the expense money General China had provided, and offered it to Job. "Get rid of that uniform as soon as you can. If they catch you in it, they'll shoot you. Now take the next train back to Harare. Go see Rima at the office. She's holding about $4,000 in back pay and bonus for you. That'll be enough to tide you until Capo Montero's estate pays out the money it owes us. My lawyers will handle that. You will be entitled to half of that." Job ignored the profit money. "You remember that day on Hill 31? He asked softly. "Shit, Job, don't pull that sob stuff on me." "You came back for me," Job said, "because sometimes I'm just a bloody fool." "Me too," Job smiled. "Sometimes I'm just a bloody fool. Listen, Job, this is not your shorty anymore. There's nothing in it for you. Get out. Go back to your village. Buy yourself another couple of pretty wives with Capo's dollars. Sit in the sun and drink a few pots of beer." "Nice try, Sean. Pity it didn't work. I'm coming with you. I'm giving you a direct order. I'm refusing to obey it, so convene a court-martial." Sean laughed and shook his head. "She's my woman, so it's okay for me to risk my life. I've been nursemaiding you for almost 20 years, and I'm not giving up now," Job said, and opened the cab door. "Let's go and find Cuthbert in his Superman suit." Sean left his cap and tunic on the seat. The insignia of a famous regiment would be out of place in a cheap nightclub. The Stardust was at the end of the lane, in a converted furniture factory, a barn-like building with all its windows blacked out. They could hear the music from 100 paces out, the hypnotic, repetitive beat of the new wave African jazz. Women clustered around the entrance. In the overhead light, their dresses were as colourful as butterfly wings. Their hairstyles were flocculent afros or the intricate beaded dreadlocks of the Rastafarians, their faces painted into death masks of rouge and purple lipsticks with iridescent green eyelids like iguana lizards. They swarmed round Sean and Job, rubbing themselves against them like cats. "Hey, man, get me in," they pleaded. "Give me $5 to get in, darling. I'll dance with you and jig-jig, man, everything." "Come on, Whitey," a child with a tender, immature body in a shiny dress of cheap nylon, the face of a black Madonna and ancient, weary eyes, seized Sean's arm. "Take me with you, and I'll give you something you never had before." She reached down the front of Sean's body and cupped her hand to fondle him. Sean took her wrist and restrained her. "What have you got that I've never had before, sweetheart? AIDS?" They pushed their way through the rustling nylon skirts and clouds of cheap perfume, and at the door paid their $5. The doorman stamped their wrists with an indelible die in lieu of an entrance ticket, and they ducked through the black curtain. The music was a stunning, painful assault. The lights were revolving strobes and ultraviolet. The dance floor pulsated with humanity, transformed into a single, primitive organism, like some gigantic amoeba. "Where's the bar?" Sean bellowed into Job's ear. "I'm a stranger here myself," Job seized his arm, and they struggled through the engulfing sea of light and sound and gyrating bodies. The faces around them were transported, as in religious fervour. Eyeballs rolled, glaring white in the rays of the ultraviolet lamps. Sweat glistened on upraised arms and streamed in rivulets down jet-black cheeks. They reached the bar. "Don't risk the whiskey," Job yelled, "and make them open the beer in front of you." They drank directly from the cans, besieged in a corner of the bar with the ocean of humanity pressing hard against them. There were a few white faces, all male, tourists and Peace Corps and military advisers. But most of the clientele were black soldiers, still in uniform, so that Sean and Job blended into their surroundings. "Where are you, Cuthbert, in your Superman shirt?" Sean pushed away one of the more persistent bar girls and peered over the heads of the dancers. "We'll never find him in here." "Ask one of the barmen," Job suggested. "Good thinking." Sean reached across and grabbed the front of the barman's shirt to get his attention, and then stuck a $5 banknote into his top pocket and shouted the question in his ear. The barman grinned and yelled back, "Wait, I find him." 10 minutes later, they saw Cuthbert working his way down the bar towards them, a skinny little man, and the Superman T-shirt was at least 2 sizes too large for him. "Hey, Cuthbert, anybody ever tell you that you look like Sammy Davis Jr.?" Sean greeted him. "All the time, man." Cuthbert looked pleased. Sean had obviously picked out his pet vanity. "Your uncle sends his love. Can we go somewhere to talk?" Sean suggested as they shook hands. "Best place to talk is here," Cuthbert answered. "Nobody else going to hear a thing you say. Give me a beer. Can't talk with a dry throat." Cuthbert drowned half his beer at a draught and then asked breathlessly from the effort, "You were supposed to be here last night. Where you been, man?"
"We were delayed."
"You should have been here last night. Would have been easy, man. Tonight, well, tonight is different."
"What's changed?" Sean asked with a sink of dread in his chest.
"Everything's changed," Cuthbert said. "The Hercules arrived 1700 hours. Come to pick up the goods."
"Has it left yet?" Sean demanded anxiously.
"Don't know for sure. She was still there when I left the base at 2000 hours, sitting out there in front of the number 3 hangar. Perhaps she's still there now. Perhaps she long gone. Who knows?"
"Thanks a lot," Sean said. "That's a great help."
"That's not all, man." Cuthbert clearly enjoyed being the bearer of evil tidings.
"Hit us with it, Cuthbert."
He finished the beer in another long swallow and held up the empty can. Sean ordered another, and Cuthbert waited for it, drawing out the suspense masterfully. "2 full paracommandos of the 5th Brigade came down from Harare in the Hercules. They real cool, those 5th Brigade cats," Cuthbert said with relish. "They real mean dudes, no shit."
"Cuthbert, you've been watching too much Miami Vice on television," Sean accused. But he was worried. The 5th Brigade were the elite of the Zimbabwean army, converted by their North Korean instructors into ruthlessly efficient killing machines. 2 full paracommandos of 100 men each, added to the standing garrison of 3rd Brigade troops, almost 1,000 crack veterans on base.
"Your uncle says you're going to take us in, Cuthbert. Pass us through the gates."
"No way, man," Cuthbert was vehement. "Not with those 5th Brigade cats in there."
"Your uncle will be pissed off with you, Cuthbert. He's a pretty cool cat himself, man. Uncle China is," Sean imitated Cuthbert's hip jargon.
Cuthbert looked worried.
"Man, I fixed your pass," he explained hurriedly. "You'll have no trouble getting in. The guards are expecting you. You don't need me, man. No sense I should compromise myself. No sense at all."
"You've got the pass here?"
"Right on. The password, too. You'll have no trouble."
"Let's go." Sean took Job's arm and steered him towards the door. "That Hercules could take off any time."
Cuthbert hurried between them, down the lane to where the 3 Unimogs were parked. "Here's the pass." He handed the plastic-covered card to Sean. It was slashed with a scarlet top priority cross. "The password is a number, 57, and your reply is Samora Machel. Then you show the pass and sign the book. Simple as a pimple, man. You in like Flynn?"
"I'll tell your uncle that you couldn't bring yourself to come with us."
"Hey, give me a break, will you? No sense me getting culled, man. I'm more used to my uncle alive and kicking than dead meat."
"Cuthbert, you are wasted in signals. You definitely should be on television."
Sean shook hands with him and watched him scurry back into the Stardust Club.